the story of my life. No respect. I don't get no respect at all. The story of my life. No respect. I don't get no respect at all.
They couldn't score and fell flat, and the 40 shots on goal is a little deceiving. Yeah. And even though they had some really good opportunities, surprisingly, they need to play with that intensity. If those last 3-4 minutes, the Rangers sometimes don't play at their best level against lower-tier teams.
Here's Johnny!
Nope, this is Ranger Proud, the Ring Podcast with Ranger Proud, here on the Bleed Blue Show.
Yeah, what's up, ladies and gentlemen? Condensed episode, the Ring Podcast with Ranger Proud. Stanley Cup Finals Part 3. The Florida Panthers should close this out. The airing of this episode right before game number 5 in Sunrise, Florida. Let's talk about it, man, because we don't have much time to discuss. Maybe get into some Blue Shirts transactions a little bit later, and then also around the NHL. I definitely want to get the guys' thoughts on the franchise that moved from Arizona to Utah, as far as the Utah Hockey Club not coming up with a team name and going with the Washington Commanders or the Washington Football Club playbook. Glenn, what's up, man? How you doing, man? Let's talk some Stanley Cup Finals, man. How's everything, man?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. I've been watching the finals, not necessarily with a lot of interest, but I've been watching just to keep up and see what happens. And, it'd be nice to see a good game tonight after Edmonton exploded the other night, and hopefully they can make a series out of it.
Oh, do you think Edmonton's going to win Game 5 and bring this thing back to Edmonton for a Game 6? Or how do you look at that?
I really do. I liked the way they played. I thought they obviously got the Bob, and I thought Florida played with a little trepidation that we really hadn't seen. Maybe we did a little bit at the end of Game 3, where I thought, when Edmonton turned the game from 4-1 to 4-3 and, we're putting pressure on to tie the score, but I thought Florida was able to, kind of get it back and hold them off at the end of that game. But between that third period of Game 4 and what we saw, Game 3 and what we saw in Game 4, I think that... I think Edmonton's going to win tonight and bring it back to Edmonton. I really do. I think they found a way to solve Bob. You can only hold that offensive talent for so long. And I was wondering if Florida was going to be able to do it for one more night. You never saw a team that had so much top-heavy offensive talent, and all they were getting were goals from the bottom six. It was unbelievable. And you wondered if Florida could hold them off one more game to do that, but obviously they could not. Edmonton came out flying. It was 3-0 before you knew it, and they just kind of won it going away. So, yeah, I'm feeling good about Edmonton tonight myself.
Okay, cool. I feel indifferent. I think this thing is over in Game 5. I could be wrong, and if I'm wrong and this thing somehow extends another couple of games, and we'll be back in the following week to discuss it before the NHL draft next week and, of course, the free agency period. I just think it's almost like when I saw the NBA game the other night when Boston lost Game 4 and they brought it back to Boston just to smash Dallas to close it out. I feel exactly the same way what this is going to be. Mm-hmm. I think Florida smells blood. I think they're a veteran enough squad to handle this. Paul Maurice gets his championship. Alexander Barkov gets his championship. What we saw in Game 4 was desperation out of a franchise just to at least get one game out of this. You're right. I agree. As far as the bottom six for the Edmonton Oilers with Janmark and Adam Henrique, Holloway, they did excellent job. Darnell Nurse, the defenseman, they did an excellent job. I mean, they all played well, to be quite honest with you. And they took advantage in transition against the Florida defense. That most teams couldn't do this this playoff run. They have the horses to do it. I just think this was a little bit more of a wake-up call for, like you said, Bobrovsky, and, of course, that unit we've seen all playoff season long in the East. I think they get it done, man. It's going to be great because I will also say this, as far as Connor McDavid, if there was ever a game as far as, you know, he's going to be a Hall of Famer with his trajectory as far as statistics, but as far as legacy game, if he could force a Game 6, it will start tonight. for his career, mm-hmm. as far as big games, you know, go win or go home, or win or win and bring it back, or if you lose, you're done. So, it's all set up for Connor McDavid, whether he does it or somebody on his team does. But as long as they get the win to go back to game six, I think, you know, for his, you know, future legacy, this would definitely add to it starting now in his young career.
Yeah, no, I think you're right about that. This is obviously his first time getting this far in the playoffs, and the elite players, the truly, you know, top 5% players in the history of the NHL, as much as they've done in the regular season, they've made their mark in the playoffs. So, it's been a long time coming for him, 9 years, to get this far. And, I think if he can, force a game six back at Edmonton, you know, at that point, it's almost like, well, watch out. We might have something going on here. I think if he can do that, and get them back to Edmonton, that would certainly be a good mark on his legacy. I think that, I just feel like this team has such – between Nugent Hopkins and obviously Draisaitl and McDavid and the year that some of these other guys have had, I find it hard that they're just going to explode in one game and then they're going to go back to bed again tonight. I kind of feel we used to call it an olive jar goal. You know, when you try to get a goal, you can't. And then all of a sudden you get one, and then you get three. And it was like, you know, taking that one olive out of the bottle and made them all fall out. I think that, what we saw the other night, it could be the start of something. I mean, they're an overwhelming offense. And, the first couple of games I was kind of thinking, geez, this is going to turn out where Florida is going to win this cup with really no adversity at all. I mean, we're going to wind up, the Rangers are going to wind up having given them the hardest time. And they were down 2-1, but the Rangers won those two games in overtime, and I don't know that as a Ranger fan you really felt good about those games. I mean, you felt good that they won, but as far as, all right, we got this now, I don't think in game 2 and 3 against Florida that the Rangers won, I really went away thinking, okay, we're okay now. And if you're, on Florida side, you probably felt the same way and didn't really feel like there was any way the Rangers were going to win two more games unless they got, really lucky. I was thinking that, wow, through game one and two periods into game two, I was like, boy, the Rangers are going to wind up giving them the hardest time of anybody in these playoffs. And you usually don't see a team win a cup without facing some adversity. I think if Florida loses tonight, if Edmonton can force a game six back in Edmonton, I think that might, put some questions in their heads, especially if it's, like a 5-1 or 5-2 game or something where Edmonton gets a bunch of goals and McDavid has 4 points. I think it would, possibly put some doubt in their heads going back to Edmonton. So, I'm hoping this is going to be a good game tonight, but, if you're Connor McDavid, like you're talking about his legacy, I think you're going into this game feeling like, we can really do something here if we can pull it off again tonight. So I expect Edmonton really to come out flying again, and we'll see how Florida handles it.
Cool. Let's go to Carl. What up, Carl? How you doing, man? I hope all is well. I have to see notes on Twitter. Shout out to Carl. Hey, Carl, your thoughts on what happened in Edmonton games 3 and 4 with Florida with a blitz of a goals back to back to back in that second period to really seal the deal and go up 3-0. But like Glenn was just saying, as far as could Edmonton ride that momentum with the 6-goal explosion in 2 periods, I'm thinking it's still over tonight in Florida. I think Florida closes it out. But what are your thoughts as far as game number 5? And I think me and Glenn are in agreement as far as Connor McDavid, like a game that helps towards his legacy. He's going to be a future mm-hmm. Hall of Famer, of course, with his statistical trajectory. But it's certain games like this that could, the moment that we're talking about, if he can force a game six. What are your thoughts?
So on the games on the weekend, the game three and game four, you know, Edmonton had that sort of spirited rally in the third period after Florida just seemingly just kind of out of nowhere. The game was tied. Then all of a sudden, I think it was within a span, I think it was 5 minutes. Glenn or Steve probably check it. I think it was within a span of 5 minutes, the three goals were scored. It just kind of came out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, you blinked, and boom, all of a sudden it's 4-1. And then, you know, they had to, you know, there was that furious rally, and then there was that sort of seminal moment, I thought, at least until the game four of the series to me, was when there was, I think there was 30 seconds to go, and the puck is to the left of Bobrovsky in the corner. And I think, was it Mikkola? It was either Mikkola or one of the players on Florida. Basically, it was a board battle, and very similar to the Ranger game five, where there was about 20 seconds to go, and Mikkola had the puck for Florida, basically pinned up to the boards, and no Ranger could get the puck from him for the whole rest of the clock. Edmonton basically couldn't do the exact same thing, and then the clock expired. Mm. And so at that point, I'm thinking, okay, it's basically over. Listen, much like what I saw in basketball on Friday, I don't know what to make of any game four when the team wins and the team is up three games to nothing. Because we could, you know, there's always the logic of trying to talk yourself into thinking maybe they can get back into the series, right? And that kind of stuff. And then I saw what I saw in basketball last night, and I was like, yeah, that's kind of pretty much what I expected. And so tonight, you know, Edmonton basically did the same thing to the basketball that the Dallas Mavericks did in their game four when they were down three games to nothing. Blowout, come back on the road, and then, you know, basically it's, you know, say goodnight, gentlemen, sweep. Do I expect that tonight? I think so. Now, I don't expect it to be, you know, 5-1. I know Florida does not play a style conducive to blowing the opposing team out. But do I think they grind the game out? Do I think part of me believes that they kind of wanted to celebrate in Florida? There's actually a part of me that kind of believes that for whatever reason. I have nothing to base this on, but it seems like when you're up three games to nothing, very rarely do you just, I'm trying to think of in different sports, whether it be baseball is maybe a little bit different, but it seems like in hockey and basketball, when a team is up three games to nothing, the team that is up just takes the gas off a little bit. They may get behind and then get themselves back into the game, but then, you know, maybe the opposing team kind of, you know, sneaks one out, and then you just kind of go from there. In this particular case, it was obviously 8-1, but tonight I would say Florida, you know, Bobrovsky is not going to have two bad games in a row, I wouldn't think. I know he's allowed 8 goals in the last 3 periods that he's played. So from that standpoint, there is a little bit, you know, trepidation, so to speak. But, you know, when we thought this was going to be a close series going in, I don't think any of us expected it to be 3 games to nothing. And so from sort of a structural standpoint, I know Edmonton has been sort of limited based on injuries. And you do wonder now at this late stage, you know, they've been playing playoff games since April the 20th. We're at June 18th right now, nearly 60 days of just hard, you know, intense playoff hockey for this long a period of time. You know, there are going to be guys you'll see on the injury list, you know, after this is all said and done, where you're like, oh, man, he was playing through this, he was playing through that, you know. And so you just wonder, at least on the Edmonton side, how many guys they can be able to muster, you know, in terms of just depth, because I know one thing that has come out of the series, if you take a look at the numbers, the amount of minutes that Edmonton's top players are playing relative to Florida's top players is about 2 minutes more across the board. And you just sort of play a game of attrition at that point, where Florida's depth just wears you down. They, you know, and that might be something that we see tonight, where maybe just sort of you get to the, probably, I'm thinking in my head, if I'm projecting this game out in my head, it's probably a 2-1 game early in the third period. Florida makes it 3-1. And even though Edmonton will try to make a rally, they just might run out of gas. Like that is in my head tonight. And we'll have to see how that plays out. As far as McDavid goes, listen, you know, I know the expectation from the time basically his name was mentioned in the entry-level draft. I'll never forget the night that the lottery happened. There was about 100 of us in the bar, and when Edmonton won the rights to McDavid, because I think it was supposed to be Buffalo all along that was projected to get him, and it didn't happen. He went second. And the expectation was he was going to eventually bring a Stanley Cup. Most of the great players like that that come out, that's usually how it goes, whether it be Crosby, Patrick Kane was one of those guys, Lemieux. Eric Lindros, unfortunately, had a concussion, so it didn't exactly work out for him. But that usually has been the trajectory. And McDavid has had, you know, some close opportunities, but not a whole lot because of the fact that his team has been, you know, on the periphery of either borderline playoff contender or lottery team. There really has not been a sort of consistent, you know, pace for him. Do I think his legacy is I do think it would be disappointing at the end of the day if McDavid's career ended without a cup relative to his performance. He's going to finish. He might, you know, there's a chance he might win the Stanley. He may win the Conn Smythe Trophy despite being on the losing team. Like I saw his numbers. I think it's fifth all time. I believe it is based on his assists and you know, I know he's only got a small amount of goals this postseason, but you know, fifth or sixth all time in points for a postseason. Like that's crazy. And you know, but you know, sometimes the luck, you know, doesn't bounce your way, and you know, he might be just sort of one of those unfortunate figures in the league, much like Dan Marino in football, where he'll be a prolific player, he'll always be remembered as a legend, but maybe just unfortunately for him, just you know, does not win at all. So I won't hold that against him. I don't hold it against a guy like Marino, like I mentioned, or Barry Sanders, or you know, I'm trying to think of other great, you know, individual players like Ted Williams never won a World Series. Like, you know, there's those guys in history where, you know, unfortunately it just, you know, it just wasn't meant to be.
All right. So let's quickly shift to the Blue Shirts, and then I'm going to throw in something around the NHL. Then we get final thoughts as we get ready for this episode or for this game five. Capocacco got the contract extension. I want to get you guys' thoughts on that. And, of course, Barclay Goodrow put on waivers by the Blue Shirts. No surprises here with these two moves if you guys want to chime in on that particular piece. But I also wanted to check on your thoughts on the, you know, this is more fan-level stuff, but the Utah Hockey Club, sort of like the Washington, you know, they have no mascot basically in Utah right now, moving from Arizona to Utah. I actually thought that, you know, I have a nickname they should have. You know, I think they should go with the Aspen. I don't think, you know, I don't know what selections or names they've been putting in out there and they could have decided on one. I think the Aspen fits that hockey club. I like the jerseys. I like the powder blue with the black and white trim. But Glenn, your thoughts, Capocacco, Barclay Goodrow, your thoughts on the Utah Hockey Club, and then your final thoughts is on top of that with the Stanley Cup. You take your time, and we'll go to Carl after that, and then we'll wrap up.
Okay. Signing Capocacco to that contract makes him keepable and makes him tradable. You've got to, you know, if you want to move him to another team, that team now has, you know, financial certainty of what it will cost them to obtain him for the year. I think now coupled with putting Barclay Goodrow on waivers for what's probably going to be the purpose of buying him out, opens up, I believe, it will be somewhere around $6 million. Now, I wish RP was here because he probably has a better idea what the cap situation is. And I know the Rangers have guys to sign, think about what they're going to do extending Igor, things like that. But I got a feeling that Drury is greasing the skids for a big free agent signing. I spent a little time on Cap Friendly today to see who's available. And unless he's looking, shooting at the stars for somebody like Stamkos, who may not be looking for the money, may want to win another cup, and a guy like Gensel, who I think is probably going to be out of reach. He made $6 million this year. He's probably going to be looking for a raise. But there was one interesting name that I saw in there, and we'll talk about that when we get into the free agency. But I would not mind at all seeing Jonathan Marchessault on a line with Kreider and Zibanejad. I think he can be the right-wing solution there, and I think he can come at a price where if you move Kako and you buy out Goodrow, that could be a fit. And we'll talk about that when we get into free agency. But, I really think that those are moves that Drury is making to make a big free agent signing to solve that right wing problem once and for all. So we'll see what happens with that. I guess with the naming of teams, I'm kind of a traditionalist, and I like my teams or any team to have an S on the end. I like them to be some things instead of something. And I think that, Tampa maybe was the first one that did that, the Tampa Bay Lightning. People kind of came around to calling them the Bolts sometimes for short, but I think they were the first ones that came up with a name that's a thing rather than, things. And then, of course, we had the Washington football team for a little while. We've got the Seattle Kraken now. And so I'd like to see Utah actually name their team something. And I'm hoping that this is just, we got a lot of stuff to do. We don't have time to come up with a name yet. So we'll worry about that later and not just leave it. The Utah hockey team, again, I guess that's just kind of maybe I'm old-fashioned about that, but I'd like to see them. And I'm sure with the countryside out there, the mountains, everything about Utah, there's something they can come up with to have a name for these guys. But for the time being,
so you don't like my idea? That's exactly where I was going with it, Glenn. I mean, you don't like my pitch? That's exactly where I was going with that, the Aspen.
I mean, call them like the Mountaineers or call, I don't know, just off the top of my head, but call them something. But I've never been a fan of that where they're, it's a thing rather than an S on the end.
All right, cool.
So that's where I stand on that.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Thank you, man, for your final thoughts on that. Carl, let's get your final thoughts. Scott's joined us as well. We'll get him on the final thoughts as well. But, Carl, go ahead, your final thoughts first on Kapokako, Barkley, Goodrow, and then any nickname for the team name for the Utah Hockey Club.
Okay. On the name of the hockey club, I feel like it has something to do with the mountains. I just feel like people go skiing up there. I feel like there has to be some sort of name related to that. Much like you see the Colorado Rockies in baseball, I think the Colorado Avalanche is what. Maybe not that, but I feel like something.
For context purposes, the Aspen is actually the state tree in Utah. That's why I kind of went with that. But go ahead, continue.
Okay, you know what? Hey, if they went with Aspen, I would not be against that. That would actually be a nice one. Once I saw Kraken a couple of years ago, I feel like anything goes at that point. So I would definitely mark it up. As far as Kako goes, listen, I feel like it's maybe like a last chance scenario for him. But one thing, and we talked about during the postseason, when two coaches healthy scratch you for a playoff game, like to me, that's just like the signal, like the red flag signal that your days are numbered. I'm actually a little bit stunned that they are giving him this last chance, but you know what? Hey, I guess they'll give it a shot here. Someone showed a list of like the recent number two picks, I think in like the last like 15 years, and it's just of the bad ones. And I'm just like, whoa. And he might just be on that list eventually when it's all said and done. As far as Goodrow goes, it's sort of a move that kind of had to be made. I know folks fall in love with, the playoff performance, but you can never let 15 playoff games or so dictate what you believe a player actually is. The one thing that always just sort of gnaws at me is the term playoff player, as if to somehow suggest that, Barkley Goodrow for the first 80 games of the season or 82 games of the season was just basically holding back performance and then just wanted to unleash himself in the postseason. That usually is not really the case. That's not how that works. Either a guy's good or he's not. I know Brian Boyle sort of got that sort of distinction as well, but, when you're paying, in a hard cap league, dollars equal performance. You don't pay for dollars. You don't spend dollars and say, 7 months from now, it'll all pay off. These first 7 months, we're just going to ignore whatever we see. That's usually not how that's supposed to work. So you got to get more for the buck right there. And then last thing here, they were shown before game four, some of the trades that Florida made that has built this team. And I don't know if you've heard of the guys, Devon Levi, Emil Heinemann, Mackenzie Weegar, Cole Schwint, and a couple of draft picks mixed in. Those are the guys that Florida traded to get Brandon Montour, Sam Reinhart, Sam Bennett, and Matthew Tkachuk on the roster. So when you think of just players, sometimes you might have an affliction for a certain player in the minors or even draft picks. I know there are fans that are like draft huggers out there. You know, sometimes if you make the trades right, nobody cares what you gave up. And I don't think any Florida Panthers fan right now cares about the guys that they sent off or those four players that, you know, will likely be hosting the Stanley Cup in about 3 hours tonight. So that's something to just, you know, be aware, you know, just to think about. And for the Rangers, you know, where can they, you know, find their market inefficiency and get, you know, a Montour, a Bennett, a Reinhart? Where can those players be found to fill and fortify the roster for us going forward? You know, something that we, you know, want to look at.
All right, cool. Shout out to Carl. Scott, what up, man? Just joined just in time. I'm going to give you like about 2.5 minutes, man, before we close out and get this game, man. So your thoughts on the finals, what's going to happen on game 5, and also your thoughts on the Utah Hockey Club team name and also the Rangers moves. Wakako
sorry I'm late. I know RP clearly said 7:30 a few hours ago, and in my mind I was still thinking. My apologies. Okay, anyway, all right, first Kako, I think that's a sign-in trade. I'm optimistic that there's a sign-in trade. I mean, it's not a lot of money, so, you know, he did prove, I will give him some credit, in that last game he was pretty much our most effective player that wasn't named Igor, you know, with the forechecking and the physicality and whatnot. But I mean, if that's his role, that's his role. But I don't see him being the answer to that, top six winger problem. Obviously, one of those, we don't have the same problem that we have going into next season. Coming into last season, we had two. Lafreniere clearly filled that role in one of them. So now we have another one, assuming Roslovich and aren't coming back, which I assume they're not. So if that's his role as a third or fourth winger, like, so be it. But I think that since he is only 23, you know, that would make him, with a $2.4 million contract, which is nothing, that might make him attractive trade bait to other teams that are on the rebuild and whatnot. So that's good news there. I think it's a sign and trade. And worst case scenario, it's a last chance. And, if come January, February, you know, we look like we're hopefully a cup contender again, and I don't see any reason why we shouldn't be, then he might be, you know, trade bait at the deadline to, get those final pieces and whatnot. So I don't see him on the team either this year or the trade deadline next year. So there's that. Goodrow, I liked him on the team before he turned out to be one of our best scorers in the playoffs. And I think the cap hit is $3.6 million for the next 3 years. You know, I think it's down. So that's nothing for that caliber of player. So hopefully this is just, a salary cap thing and whatnot. And I would like to see him back. As far as Utah goes, this Utah Hockey Club thing is just a one-year thing like the Redskins did while they try and figure out something permanent. As far as the great name, there are some great names that they're throwing around. I like the Blizzard. I like the Yeti. I like the Swarm isn't a bad one. So hopefully this is just 1 year while they put some real good thought into it. Meanwhile, the jerseys they came out with for the first year are actually pretty good, and it could just be a strategic move because obviously they're going to sell a ton of them for the first year, and if they do change the name after next year, then they're going to do all those sales all over again, so it could just be a revenue generator. But I really hope they don't stick with that because that's a soccer type of name, hockey club, you know, I can't stand that. So hopefully it's just a temporary bridge while they figure out something permanent. And, I like Blizzard and Swarm would be my top two, assuming that they get the jerseys right if they go with those.
Blizzard's not bad. I actually like that. Swarm seems more like minor league baseball-ish, but I like the Blizzard. That's actually a good one. Well, let's pick up on that conversation next Tuesday. We're going to do a full 90-minute episode, conclusion of the Stanley Cup Finals, NHL draft, prospects, and all that. Recap on the season of all the teams. We'll have a full 90-minute episode next Tuesday, 8 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. And then that'll be the last episode for a couple of weeks, man. So let's have some fun, guys. Enjoy the game of the Stanley Cup Finals. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Glenn, Scott, and Carl, Steve. We're out. The Rink Podcast with Ranger Proud, Bleed Blue.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig
bleep, bloop, bleep, bloop, bleep, bloop, bleep, bloop, bleep, bloop, bleep, bloop, bleep, bloop.